We present the news quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the news quiz. We start with a product listing from the Amazon website read by Zeb Soans.
Rat Killer 997. Gift wrap available.
And our thanks to Stuart Simon for sending that in. Now let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Mark Steele and Rebecca Front. And opposite them on my left, Bob Mills and Jeremy Hardy. Mark, have a listen to this.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. Everywhere you go.
Take a look in the 5 and 10.
Glistening once again.
With candy canes and silver lanes aglow.
It's beginning to look a lot like Christmas.
I think I know the answer already.
Yes.
I think it's that it will soon be Christmas.
Sadly, no. Mark, who's having a get-together this Christmas? Havana. Who's Havana? Mark.
You're doing it like extra simple because it's me.
Yeah.
Right, well, I would guess that refers to the capital of Cuba.
Yes.
And it's a charming story indeed because, well, it just goes to show that it's worth invading a place and bombing a place and blockading a place and trying hundreds of different glorious attempts to assassinate the president over a 50-year period, because then if it doesn't work out, you can just change your mind and no harm's done. And that's what they've done. And America are now, after doing all of that, they're now saying to Cuba, oh, I'll tell you what, if you just sort of manage yourself a little bit better, we can be friends again after the Americans did all that. So I feel sorry for Castro, because I reckon that it's avoiding all the assassination attempts that's kept him going for the last 50 years. There's probably part of the agreement that ought to be that they still try by sort of getting a shark into his tea or something.
The extraordinary thing was the involvement of the Pope in all this. Did you not?
He was part of it, yeah.
He's got a part-time job with Relate now.
Oh, has he?
He just goes around fixing stuff all the time. He can solve any conflict. He's amazing.
He's a super Pope, isn't he?
He's infallible. That's the thing, he can do anything. I mean, apart from, you know, AIDS in sub-Saharan Africa and institutionalised child abuse, he can sort anything else.
But Obama's gone a bit sort of legacy happy now, hasn't he? Because it's the end of term for him, so he's like sort of signing off on everything.
Yeah, anything.
That's a bit ridiculous, but oh, go on, let's do that.
That's all he can do.
My favourite story about the Cuban Revolution when it first happened, because the old regime they overthrew was a terrible corrupt old thing run by the mafia and all that. And the main opposition, there was only one opposition party allowed, and the leader of the opposition had his own radio show. That's all he was allowed. And one week at the end of his show, he shot himself. And I often wondered if Cuban radio was as unflappable as Radio 4, because then you'd have heard, that was the last in this series.
That's interesting. I was listening to, I think it might have been LBC, but Nick Clegg's got his own radio show, hasn't he?
Mm.
Yes.
What are you suggesting?
A thought. I'm just...
Do you think Jeb Bush and Hillary Clinton will be sent over to say to the Castros, now we're going to show you that a democracy must not be just about the same families passing power to each other?
Well, then they could come and talk to the monarchy. The US and Cuba have this week moved towards ending a standoff that has lasted more than 50 years with a historic deal aimed at normalising relations between the two countries. The first sign of a truce between the two countries happened at Nelson Mandela's funeral when President Obama and Raul Castro shook hands. Obama said Castro was pleased to see him, although it later transpired he did actually just have a cigar in his pocket. 2 points to Mark. Rebecca, in this season of goodwill, who has an evil plan?
An evil
plan. E-V-E-L.
It's an acronym.
The English vote.
It is.
Is it English votes for English what?
Laws. It's
English
known as evil.
Well, in that case, it's largely the Conservatives who have the evil plan on account of the fact that they can afford to say whatever they want really now about Scotland because they've only got the one MP. This is this slightly odd thing that only a few months ago people in Westminster were putting an enormous amount of effort and travel miles into trying to keep the union together. And now the very same people are sort of carefully unpicking the whole thing. But you can't help wondering, you know, if you had friends who were a married couple and who had almost got a divorce, you know, just about at the brink, just about managed to pull it back together again, then came to you for advice and said, what do you think we can do to avoid this ever happening again? The one thing you wouldn't say to them is, spend a bit less time with each other, don't discuss things unless it directly affects you. You know, just steer clear, honestly, just give them a wide berth. It would be very poor advice, and I can't help thinking that ultimately what's going to happen is that they're just going to split, presumably, aren't they?
Apparently the Lib Dems want to use this as an opportunity to introduce an element of proportional representation to the House of Commons, to which the Conservatives have replied, good grief, are you still here?
You can't be bothered with being English, though. I mean...
But Ed, what are the issues that want votes? What, are we going to have drastic reforms to queuing and tutting and apologising when it's not your fault? I wonder, what are the English issues?
Well, there was one MP who said, many of my constituents are very, very angry at how Scottish MPs can vote on matters that affect England. And are people really angry? Really? Are there really people going, fuck off! I've had enough about this! You've seen this about the bridal path that's going to go through Emma Hempstead and it's going to be voted on by a bloke from Stenhouse Muir! Can't take any more! Really?
The bit I don't know says, why is William Hague in charge of it? It seems such a...
It's something to do. I never became leader. Hoping to be stakes, but have spent some time with Angelina Jolie.
Oh, it's just like Mike Yarwood's in the room.
Whatever happened to that young man on that log flume? What became of him? Remember on his...
Was he on a log flume?
Oh, he was at the cap of the log flume.
Really?
Oh, he was the future back then.
16 years old, 1977, yeah. The year of God Save the Queen. It's the Pistols getting arrested for taking a barge down the Thames. And England is in turmoil. And there's a 16-year-old, William Hague, at the Conservative Party conference, looking like a vengeful old tobacconist. People of my age don't know they're born.
Now he's in charge of evil. It's an extraordinary thing, isn't it? William Hague has presented four options to the House of Commons to reform Parliament and provide English votes for English laws, or EVIL for short. One proposal bans Scottish MPs from voting on English laws. One proposal gives English MPs the final say. One gives English MPs a formal veto. And one makes David Cameron dictator for life and monarch of the Glen. If EVIL is brought in, it will finally provide an answer to the famous West Lothian question coined by Enoch Powell in 1977 when he asked, where exactly is West Lothian? 2 points to Rebecca. Bob, which UKIP candidate has been forced to step... Oh, no, wait a minute, this is a question from last week. Oh, no, it's happened again. There we are, that's... Why will Mr Smith not be going to Westminster?
Well, Mr. Smith...
It's heaven, isn't it?
Kerry Smith, and by the way, it's a girl's name. Kerry Smith, he was going to be the MP for South Basel and East Thurrock. And then they came along and said, Kerry, we're going to have to ask you to step aside because we've hit a bit of a humdinger here. We've got a young lady, an ethnic young lady, and she's going to come and do it. And it Natasha Bolter would be super for the party. And he said, and stood aside. And then Natasha Bolter came and sat down. She lasted about 3 days and said she'd been sexually, had claimed to be sexually harassed by the UKIP General Secretary. So then she wasn't it anymore. So Kerry said, oh, I'll come back, I don't mind. And they said, well, no, don't worry, we've got Neil Hamilton. But you wait there because we have a strange idea we ain't quite finished yet. Listen, Neil Hamilton was chosen to stand for UKIP. And on the night before they were announcing it, the UKIP General Secretary phoned up Neil Hamilton and said, I need to talk to you about some of your expense claims. If you're too dodgy for UKIP, that's Olympic dodginess, right? So, at the end of it all, they've gone back to Kerry Smith. They've said, we need a safe hand on the tiller. OK, will you do it? And he said, yes, of course I will. I'm here. Don't worry. Everything's all right now. And they then get these intercepted telephone conversations where he refers to disgusting poofters. He says it's illegal to hunt pheasants, but he's OK because he lives in Billericay, so you can hunt peasants. Mm. It's very funny. He's taken the H out and made a joke.
I see.
And refers to somebody, an Oriental lady he refers to as a chinky bird. And so UKIP General Secretary Roger Bird said to him, "That's even by our standards... that's slightly beyond the pale." Because he doesn't like disgusting pufters or chinky birds. He's not only a homophobic racist, he's a homophobic racist from 1973.
He blamed it, didn't he, on taking painkillers?
He said, "I'll tell you the problem. I was in a tremendous amount of pain. I'd banged my knee, and so I was on painkillers. I would never refer to somebody like that, but I went to the hospital and some packy doctor gave me some painkillers." And that's the reason I did it. Oh,
but you know, you do... I'm not defending him, but you do have to carefully read the contraindications leaflets. Because I was about to take some antihistamines a while ago.
Right.
And then I noticed in the small print it said, "May cause churlishness and pedantry."
Oh.
And I didn't. So, you know, in his defence.
He said also, he said, "I grew up in the East End, and if you talked politically correct, you'd get beaten up for being a boffin." And you think, what do you mean, talked politically correct? As though somehow there is a default. If you grow up in the East End, there is a default position, which is that you are a loathsome bigot. And anything outside of that means you're some sort of brainiac who's cruising for a pasty. And the idea that because you grew up somewhere, you've trapped... I grew up in suburban Surrey in the 1960s. Roman Catholics were still hiding in the walls of stately homes at that time. That because you grow up... So Rudolf Hess was imprisoned in my village. Admittedly, he did have quite a lasting effect on the voting patterns in the area. You don't have to stay as you were brought up. You can blossom.
I do think it's incredible. In the last few weeks, UKIP have had a candidate make bigoted remarks, a candidate quit over expenses, two candidates involved in a scandal. It's like an incredibly depressing version of the 12 Days of Christmas.
Their official sort of business, it just passes you by. But Nigel Farage, this statement that he made, where he said, "You know, I was on a train a little while ago, and I heard a number of people in my carriage all speaking in foreign languages, and I have to say that did make me feel rather uncomfortable." And I thought, well, that's mental illness, that is, isn't it? If foreign languages make you uncomfortable, that's nuts. That's not... You don't want votes, you need a shrink. That's like being one of these people who's scared of buttons or something, isn't it?
Not only that, but it was an empty carriage.
Scared. Of course people are scared, aren't they? They could do UKIP every day, it's in the papers, Bulgaria, this thing they keep saying, 30 million Bulgarians can come over any day. Yeah, because people are terrified. Must be people thinking, oh, no wonder I'll open the door to try and get in the garden. The door's jammed. I can't get out. There's Bulgarians as far as I can see. Yes, we all live here now in garden. Nothing you can do. Lisbon. Who's that down there? She's Dimitrov. His head is stuck in cat flap. Nothing you can do. Lisbon Treaty say you must feed every day, saucer and biscuit you must give.
Kerry Smith has resigned from UKIP after being forced to quit as a prospective parliamentary candidate. Mr Smith stepped down as a candidate for South Basildon and East Thurrock after the Mail on Sunday reported leaked phone calls in which he made offensive comments about gay people. After leaving UKIP, Mr Smith told the BBC that his comments were no worse than the language in the TV comedy Only Fools and Horses. The story of dodgy wheeler dealers trying to get rich quick in London, UKIP have existed since 1990. At the end of round one, the scores are Mark and Rebecca have got 4 points, but so too have Bob and Jeremy. We start round two with a cutting from the press release for the Jamala Wildlife Lodge in Australia.
Experience Canberra like never before and sleep with some of the world's most dangerous animals.
Thanks to Nick Miller for sending us that. Mark, who's bringing in equality by hook or by crook?
Oh, this would be the church.
Yeah.
Yes, there's a woman bishop. So getting on for 100 years after the vote was given to women and 90-odd years after the first member of parliament that was a woman and 20 years after even the MCC allowed women to go into Lords. These are the crustiest old 15th century people. And even they, well, I suppose, oh, a bloody woman. And 20 years after that, the church... and these are the people who are supposed to be in touch with the character that rules the universe, that they've gone... Yeah,
what, Lord right. Sugar?
Yeah. So there's finally a woman bishop. They're extraordinary, the Church of England. My favourite vicar I come across recently was in Taunton this summer, and I went down there, it was with my wife, we got an ice cream, and we sat on this little bench by a lovely church... And the vicar come out and he went, "Get out! Get out! This is private property. You're not living on here. Get out!" I said, "Oh, I'll see why you're a vicar, mate, because the New Testament's full of Jesus going around Galilee going, 'Get out! Get out!' isn't it?" And his next line completely redeemed him in my eyes, because he went, "Don't you start going on to me about bloody Jesus." But yes, there's now one woman.
One. Well, she's not there yet, is she?
But it's not the clergy that have been the problem. For years, the clergy, the bishops, the priests, they've all been fine. It's the laity who are the problem. It's the ones who believe in God who have caused all the trouble.
We've got, I think, the greatest named bishop ever, Libby Lane. What a name. She could be the lead singer of the Revillos or something.
And she's going to be Bishop of Stockport. Do you not think that sounds like one of those pubs that goes silent when you walk in?
And the other slight thing, and I'm not demeaning it anyway, it's a wonderful thing, but you think bishopric are really sought after. Hmm. The bishopric is so... She's got it because it's been vacant since last May. Oh. No one really wants that gig,
small steps, isn't it? You know, it's kind of little gestures.
Yeah.
I think if I was the first... woman bishop.
Which, We'd be surprised.
Quite, actually. Yeah, there's a point. Now, that's another battle to fight, don't you think? Not enough Jewish bishops. But that's for another day, Sandy. But if I were to have been made the first female bishop, I know we're supposed to go for kind of gender neutrality. I'm supposed to be an actor and not an actress. But wouldn't you want to be called a she bishop? I just think that would be great. It'd be really Game of Thrones. No, they just call him bishop. But I'd insist on that. I'd say, no, I will only do this if I can be known as
she bishop. I'd still call a woman
bishop.
A lady man-ess. I suppose it won't be a bishopric anymore. What will it be if there'll be a bishop?
It depends what you call it, really, in your house.
Bishop Twinkle.
Yeah, Bishop Twinkle.
It's a slippery slope. There'll be people wearing hats.
That's another option, yes.
Do you think the people who oppose have got their priorities a bit mixed up? You can't imagine that Jesus is going to come back and go, "I can turn a blind eye to the murder and mayhem, but what's with this totty going on?"
Because Jesus only chose male disciples, you see, because Jesus knew that women would have a hard time believing his rather extravagant claims. Women have met a lot of men who think they're God's gift.
Reverend Libby Lane has been announced as the first female bishop for the Church of England just a month after an historic change to canon law. The proper place for a woman is a church. They're full of candles, red wine and about 500 cushions that you'd never know what to do with. David Cameron said Libby Lane's appointment was an important step forward for the church, although as she's a bishop, that actually constitutes an illegal move. 2 points to Mark. Bob, what smelly gift has NASA received this festive season?
NASA, this is Life on Mars. Mm. It's a god-awful small affair. The Curiosity rover, that's what it's called, sent back some information that they have discovered on Mars methane.
That's a god-awful smell affair.
Yeah. And what methane means to scientists is that methane is created by organic matter. Therefore, it means that there is some form of life on Mars, which is fantastic. And we've all lived, haven't we, through the, you know, wow, life on Mars, Martian people. But it turns out that life on Mars actually consists of a series of farts. And as my lady wife pointed out, well, for all the money that it's cost them to find that out, they could have come and spent a week here.
What I liked about this whole story is that the bit they've been investigating where they're finding these little pops of methane is called the Gale Crater, which is such a great euphemism. Did something emanate from your Gale Crater?
But if it does mean there's life, then apparently the most likely is that it's some kind of rodent, a beaver or a squirrel or a rat, because they give off more methane than humans.
There's been a big study by scientists of beaver-mediated methane emissions. apparently, beavers are producing 200 times more methane
That we can't say.
I know. That they're producing 200 times more methane than they did in the year 1900. Who knows this?
How many more times?
200 times more methane than they did in 1900.
What, per beaver?
Yes.
Per
beaver.
And in fact, scientists are now having to, because they backpedal furiously on this whole climate change nonsense, and they're now saying that the rats and the squirrels are contributing almost as much as humans are to methane, which causes one of the main things that causes greenhouse gas. So all the billions we've been wasting on wind farms disfiguring the countryside, we could have just got ourselves an air rifle and got out and shot all the squirrels.
Well, this
and everything would have been fine.
It was extraordinary. Well, it was science.
You didn't have a Nurofen about 10 minutes ago.
NASA have announced the discovery of methane gas on Mars, a possible indicator that the planet may once have supported life. Methane is typically produced by animals and other organisms as a waste gas, usually when they're in a lift. A transmission from the Curiosity rover was sent to NASA confirming the presence of gas, immediately followed by a transmission from EDF Energy asking if they wanted to change provider. The presence of methane on Mars has surprised scientists who always believed it came from Uranus.
Take so long to get there. Great.
Oh, the tension. I thought you'd beat me to it. Now, Mark, what's not rum about Brum?
Brum, Birmingham, right. So is this another one of these surveys? You get quite a lot of these things about which town is the nicest one to live in. And I think there's one that says Birmingham is 8th or 9th or something, isn't there?
It's a rough guide.
Yeah.
The rough guide?
Yeah, not just anywhere.
Oh, right,
it's the 9th most exciting place in the world.
Well, now, I wonder if this has had an impact, because if you know anyone from Birmingham, you will have heard this, where Birmingham people love telling you this fact, where they go, do you know there's more miles of canal in Birmingham than there is in Venice? And they will all tell you that. And I always think, yeah, but the thing with canals, it's more quality than quantity, really. I can't imagine there's many people ever go to Venice and go, we were very disappointed because we measured it and it's smaller than the ones. So next year we're going to Stechford. You might as well say, do you know there's more paint in a warehouse in Luton than there is on the roof of the Sistine Chapel?
And also, if you've ever spent a weekend in Venice with a loved one going over the Rialto Bridge and the Bridge of Sighs, you will notice a complete lack of old Ford Cortinas in there. Can
I saw a series of websites in Birmingham with the different bits of Birmingham, Erdington and all these sorts of places, saying is crap. And then someone's put one that's trying to big up Birmingham, and it's called Birmingham is not crap. That's the name of the website. And it had a little competition on it saying Brummy of the Year. And I thought, oh, well, that'd be interesting. I'll see who's Brummy of the Year. And it said, click on this link to see who the nominations are. And I clicked on the link and it said, this year, due to foul and abusive language and comments, there will be no Brummy of the Year. Poor Birmingham. And my memory, because my mum came from Birmingham, so I have this sort of memory of Birmingham, would always be going up there every Christmas and being stood there on the doorstep for the first 10 minutes of the time we were staying there with me granddad and me dad talking about the route. Just every time it would start like that. What way did you come? Well, right, that way did you? Well, I'll tell you what you could have done is you could have taken the A38, gone up the Bristol Road, gone round the back of Stechford, up through Solihull, back through Bearwood, up through Digbeth, gone across to Edgbaston Cricket Ground, driven across Square Leg, gone back up to Skitty Junction, took the 6th exit off the 9th roundabout and the 7th exit off the 15th roundabout, gone back up to Selly Oak, down to Aston, gone up to Birmingham New Street Station, down onto the platform and got the train because I'm buggered if I know the way. That's my memory of Birmingham.
It's the rough guide, of course. Yeah. And the rough guide is for those people who want to go on holiday but say, well, the thing is, we want to get right off the tourist trail. We don't want to go with all the grockles, you know, those awful holidaymakers. We want to go somewhere where no tourist ever goes. Birmingham. So there'll be people living in Berberine counters, and someone will say, have you ever been to Birmingham? No, I've never been to Birmingham. Oh, you must. You simply must go. But don't go where everyone goes for a Balti and Moseley. Go to Sturchley. We found a Balti house there, tiny people, invisible to the human eye. And this Balti house only appears once every 100 years. They were the friendliest people. They invited us, and they wouldn't take a penny from us. It was marvellous. We stayed for 4 or 5 hours, and the whole meal came to a penny. They let us have sex with their daughters. We danced. We danced for 4 or 5 days. It was marvellous. You must go to Sturchley.
Birmingham has been named among the top 10 most exciting destinations to visit in 2015 in a list compiled by the travel guidebook series Rough Guides. Yes, Birmingham has been voted the 9th most exciting place on earth by a man who's only been to 9 places. Key Birmingham attractions include the Custard Factory. Does anybody else think the people at the Rough Guides want the beaches of Polynesia to themselves this summer? Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they would like to share?
This was sent to me by someone. Very sadly, I've lost the name, but I'm very grateful for this. This was just a sign at Northampton. People, not the health service, but it can still produce this. It just says, Northampton NHS, family planning advice, use rear entrance.
Anybody else?
This was sent in by John Raffle, and it's a death announcement from the Lymington Times. And it reads, it is with great regret that we wish to announce that our mother has finally given up the will to talk. If you would care to join us to get a word in edgeways and to celebrate her life, please come to Bournemouth Crematorium.
Any more for any more?
Paddy McAvoy from Hollywood County Down, and this is... from the Sunday Independent, Dublin, Fine Gael, Senator Martin Conway, in the debate on the introduction of water charges in Ireland. Water is a finite resource. Water needs to be paid for. It costs. It doesn't just fall out of the sky.
Let's take a look at the final score. Bob and Jeremy have got 12 points, but this week's winners are Mark and Rebecca with 13. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the flyer for a charity fundraising event sent to us by Graham Ferguson.
Dogs Trust Christmas Fair 2014, Sunday the 14th of December. There will be refreshments, festive music and craft stalls. Sorry, no dogs allowed.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Mark Steele, Rebecca Front, Bob Mills and Jeremy Hardy. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig, and the news was read by me, Zeph Soames. The chair script was written by Andy Walton, James Kettle and Tom Meenan, with additional material by Max Davis and Ollie Bevan. The producer was Sam Michel.